Good evening, everybody around the world. Andy Kimball here, live on the Andy and Amanda program. We've got Amanda Love in the UK, where it's currently 8 p.m. It's noon here in our rainy, cloudy day in L.A. Amanda, how the hell are you over there? How's it going, baby?
I'm doing good, my sweetheart. Yeah, I've been trying to embrace this crappy weather again. I gotta admit, it's gray.
Your crappy weather there too?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's cold and gray, and I want the sun back, Andy.
Same here. Me too. It's well, I mean, we rarely get these rainy days in LA. We have one today. It's funny. I think it was just yesterday or a few days ago, we were talking about, you know, it's sunny here all the time. It affects, you know, your mood and how you are and everything. And and there's a, you know, back coming from where I come from on the East Coast, you know, we had rain and snow and gray days and hot heat and humidity in the summertime. And you really don't get much of any of that here in the southern portion of California. And it's a great day. And you know what's interesting? It's, you know, I rolled out of bed this morning expecting to come out and, you know, see the sun shining, you know, sit outside, grab a cup of coffee, see what's on the news, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah,
I rolled out of bed to see this gray day, and I'm like, it's about time, God damn it. Yeah. Where you been?
I guess, yeah, what is it, that movie, Vanilla Sky, where he says, you can't appreciate the sweet unless you have the sour. And I think that's very true, right?
You know, I love that. I remember that. Yeah, you're very true, very true.
Yeah.
So what's going on over there? How you doing? What's new over in the UK, in that part of the world?
We've had the budget announcement today from the government regarding this year, how to take us forward with the whole COVID situation. So this may get a bit boring for our listeners. I apologize if it does, but I think it's
I'm already bored. Next. Anyway,
thank
moving
you,
right along.
Thank you for your budget support. Yeah. All right. Whatever.
Go ahead.
Okay. So I thought I would share this because I think it's interesting for other countries to know, you know, how we operate and what's currently happening with us. So they are still providing for those who have been furloughed until September. For anyone who's unaware what the furlough scheme is over here in the UK, the scheme pays employed people 80% of employees' wages for the hours they cannot work during the pandemic. So, you know, a bit of a lifesaver there. Those who are self-employed from next month can claim for a fourth grant worth 80% of 3 months' average trading profits. There will be a fifth grant later in the year. They are also increasing the national living wage by 2.2% for those who are 23 years and over. Those on universal credit who have lost their jobs or severely struggling with finances will continue to receive an extra £20 a week for another 6 months. And those who are on working tax credits will receive a one-off payment of £500. So universal credit, for those who don't know what that is, it's a payment provided by government to those eligible to help with living costs if you're on low income, out of work, or you cannot work. And working tax credit is money provided to boost the income of working people who are on low income. So it does not matter whether you're on if you're working for someone else or you are self-employed. Working tax credit counts as income when working out of your entitlement to most other means tested benefits. They've also been talking about income tax. The income tax is to receive changes. Currently here at Andy, we pay 20% income tax, which kicks in when you earn £12,500 a year. And
wait,
a starting
so you,
point... Yeah,
wait, hold on a minute. 20, so you make £12,500 a year, and the conversion rate is right around $1.36 per pound U.S. So so 12, whatever that is. Anyway, so let's just say 12, about 13. So that's about that's a little less in America. 20% of that is so that, now you're down to nine thousand whatever. I mean, you know, rounding off everything.
Yeah.
So 20% of 12,500. That's ridiculous. Anyway, we have to change that.
It is.
My administration, we're going to do something about it. Go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, thank you, Andy. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Go, Andy.
No problem. Anytime. Yeah. Anytime.
And the starting point for paying a higher tax bracket of 40% is at £50,000 a year. So the threshold.
Wait. Hold on. I don't mean to keep interrupting you, but you're giving me these numbers here, and I'm like blown away. 40% of your income goes to government if you make £50,000 a year.
Yep.
That's crazy. That's ludicrous. That's fucking, that's ridiculous.
Yes.
I can't put, what? For real?
For real.
You don't say. Really?
Yeah, seriously. Yeah.
40%? That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
That's why I work. Just stay on a just don't even work. Go play the guitar on the street somewhere. Get what you can. Holy crap.
I know, right?
That's unbelievable.
Second thing about moving to the UK after hearing such things like this. So, you know.
$50,000 a year is not a whole lot of money to raise a family, pay your rent, your mortgage, your bills, your food, your school, your enjoyment, entertainment in life. So 40% of your income, now you're down and you can't raise a family on that net.
Yeah, it is silly. It is silly. I remember when I first found out about this when I was a youngster. And I was like, you're kidding me. And it really disheartened me in every way to think that I didn't want to achieve for something so grand, knowing that a huge percentage of everything that I worked for was going straight back to government. And yeah, I was furious when I first found out. So, yeah.
We got to change that. You know, a lot of people don't realize how powerful and how much pull the show actually has to be able to create and facilitate change like that.
I know, right?
You know, and we have no power whatsoever. Anyway, moving right along. I think that's unbelievable. Yeah, go ahead.
It is, Tweeter. It is, definitely. The thresholds apparently will be increasing to £12,570 and £50,270 in April, and will then be frozen for 5 years.
Oh.
I know. Dramatic, right? And so they are saying that by April 2026, many people receiving pay rises will find themselves in the new tax bracket and therefore paying more. So they believe that would mean 1.3 million more people paying income tax and 1 million more people paying the higher rate. So obviously, you know, all that's going to be paid straight back into... I know, people, I know. It's heartbreaking. Yes. All that money is going to be paid back into the treasury, which then, you know, gets dealt out with however they see fit. So they're also increasing corporation tax. I know. Let me grab my tissues. It's so sad. I can't take this anymore. So yeah, corporation tax is going up as well. So it's currently at 19%. And... obviously, that's on the company profits, but these will be going up to 25%, and the government believe it is fair for bigger corporations to contribute to the economic recovery and smaller profit rates for smaller businesses, which I happen to agree with, which means many smaller businesses will still be paying just the 19%, and that works out at around, I think it's 70% of companies are in that bracket, whilst around 10% will be paying the full 25% tax rate.
So this is all being put in place by Parliament.
Yeah, it was all announced today. Yes, we are.
That means they can do anything they want.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, they're saying that the UK still have the lowest corporation tax within the G7 group of leading nations. And I don't know, I mean, I can't compare us to other countries when it comes to that. But they covered a few other things as well, such as a new savings product designed to make money for environmental projects and help for first-time buyers needing only, I think it's 5% of the mortgage to purchase a mortgage. But you still have to have proof of income and all that kind of thing, you know, a solid income and all that. And so,
and now we're going to get money because we want the money for-
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree, right? Mm-hmm. You tell Donald. So,
he's not all that bad, is he? Yeah.
He's not. I mean, he has some valid points.
Got some good ideas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, all these things can be heard and read fully online. I just wanted to cover the main kind of outline for people who are curious.
I am blown away. I had no idea. So, let me ask you a question.
Okay,
what
I'll try and answer, Andy.
What is... You know, I'm here in California, you're in the UK, which makes us so unique that we're brought together, you know, live. I think we're the only show in the world that joins two countries together, and not only two countries together, two people together in those countries, but two people who have never, ever met. and it makes the show kind of unique and kind of fun. But when being here, and I've been to Heathrow a couple of times, but only been to London once in my life, and just loved it there, and looking forward to going back. But not having much knowledge of everyday life of society there, being from U.S. and spending my life here, how big of a problem is lack of education, of health, of putting a roof over one's head, of getting people out of poverty? I mean, does the government support lower income people? Do these outrageous taxes that you're talking about, do the people who live in the UK see a benefit by this amazing amount of money that's taken out of everybody's pocket? Where does it go? Where does it all go? Is it in defense? It's not in the space program. It's not to support the Andy and Amanda show, although it should be.
I know, right? I was thinking about that, Andy. Yeah.
Where does it go? I mean, from you being a citizen of the UK, where do you see your tax dollars going? Where's it all going?
They're always claiming, it's going towards NHS and.
What's that? What's
policing.
What's that?
The NHS is the National Health System. So all our tax money goes into funding for our national health system. It goes into policing. It goes into repairing our roads, which are constantly getting damaged from all the heavy traffic all the time. I mean, unlike the US, because we're a smaller country, our roads here get damaged so quickly and easily, creating all these massive potholes. And, people's cars are getting damaged by them all the time. So they're constantly having to pay contractors and the councils to get out there on the roads and fix all these roads all the time. Mm-hmm. And so that's a nightmare. So that's a constant, money being drip fed into that. And there's so many areas of the government that money gets put into as well, education. Raising a family here is, I don't know how it compares to US. I mean, I know in the US you do have to fight tooth and nail to get a buck and really make it.
Yeah.
Over
you
here,
do.
You've got a little bit more assistance, because if you don't work, you can get some sort of benefit. You're entitled to some sort of benefit. And
Here too. There's welfare, there's food stamps, there's Medicare, there's health programs for those who can't afford it. So we do have that here. We do have that.
So we have the same as you guys, equivalent of that. But getting into schools and having a decent education is not too bad. It's not too bad at all. I mean, if you've got the money to go private, obviously that's always the way to go, let's face it. But there's not a huge amount of people that can provide that. I mean, there's a lot of wealthier people in my hometown, sure. There's a lot of millionaires here compared to other parts of the country. But, I still see people being very successful that have gone to a normal school like myself. I was in class with a guy that ended up being quite a big football player. And so that was pretty epic to see. Well, I wouldn't say he was like a David Beckham or anything like that, but he's done well for himself. So,
I won't talk about that.
Okay. There's that sound I missed.
In the UK, what does the government pay for public education? How high, just high school, and then you're on your own? Does the government provide educational assistance for college and so forth, and grants and whatever
be? Yeah, I mean, there are colleges,
student loans,
that the government supports. One of them is called GLOSCAP. It's a further education place that you go to after your senior school. For families who, they don't have the money to be able to send their kids to university. So you can still get a high class, I say high class, education at these places. And you can go on to do good things from these places too. So I don't think there is a huge amount of comparison. I couldn't personally comment on that. Obviously, I mean, there's plenty of people who go to university, Andy, who never get to make it in their career.
Sure, of course, here too, But is so there is a university system that the government will pay for there or no? I mean, can you go to?
You get assistance. You get assistance.
Is that a loan, or is that the government just pays for you for that? Is that a loan, or is it you have to pay it back?
That I am not sure of. No, I think you get you get assistance from the government to you know, do these courses. They're fairly, I think they're seen as like free courses, but you provide you pay for all the materials and stuff, obviously, and things like that.
No, we don't have that here. You know, once you're finished with high school, if you've gone to public high school, then you're on your own for. I mean, community colleges in the area are much less expensive than the state universities and, of course, the private universities. And many people go to area community colleges throughout this country. And there's also people who, you know, get a high school, and even if they're, you know, straight A 4.0 scholars or whatever, and they, you know, I don't know what I want, you know, I want to go to a good college. I'm not quite sure what I want to do with my life. And, you know, I want to get the basic courses out of the way. And the university, the private college I want to go is $55,000 a year. So, you know, maybe I'll go to the regional or the community college for $3,000 a year. And see what I want to do and where I want to end up and what I, you know, some join the military and then you go that route or, you know, but there's all sorts of options here. And of course the state schools, the University of UCLA, you know, the Penn State, Michigan, all the state schools are supposedly less expensive, I guess, than they are than private schools, but they're still nonetheless very difficult to get into. You know, just you know, if you live in Pennsylvania, you want to go to Penn State because you live there, doesn't mean, hey, I'm going to go to the state university because it's real tough to get in, you know, period.
Yeah.
But and it's becoming increasingly more difficult. You know, I know there's universities here where they'll have, you know, 55,000 applicants, 55,000 people graduating, you know, high school seniors to apply for 2,500 spots in a private university.
Wow.
And, you know, and even, so if you put them all, if they're all 4.0 straight A students, they've all had a couple of extracurricular activities, they've all written for the school paper, whatever, just say they're all in the same, you know, and of course we've heard the scandals here, which one paid off the ping pong coach to get in, you know, we had that episode, remember that? But barring that, and that's not the norm, of course, I'm just kind of mentioning it, but, you know, it's a crapshoot. You know, you could be this incredible scholar and you want to go to a state university or private university. It's very difficult to do regardless of your background. And I'm imagining it's the same there. I'm imagining it is. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it can be that way, Andy, very much so. I think it's a shame that class divides us because that's exactly what happens. You know, if you're on a lower income and your family doesn't work or, you know, make that decent money and you got somebody else who does make that money, you can see the difference in quality within one parenting. And that's not to judge anybody who's on an income or, you know, not working. This is not a judgment in any way. This is pretty much how it is in society that, you know, you see the difference in parenting and the quality of education that child has had living in a family that's been able to provide all these things for them. Doesn't mean the child is any better than the one who's in the, you know, the lower income family. Doesn't make them any better. But this class seems to have an interesting mindset on the way people raise their families. And I see it all the time. See it all the time, Andy. And I think to myself, what place do we slip into mentally to raise our children or create that family situation or that dynamic when you're not working and you're in that lower class bracket, that kind of trap you fall into that raises a child to be less caring, less sensitive, you know, sees the world and government as against them, doesn't give a fuck, you know? And so, and then you see the people, the wealthier families whose children are not that way. And because their mindsets are different. We're working, we're wealthier. It's a whole different mindset. So class plays a huge part of society and how we move forward with education.
And it's just interesting because somebody could do pretty okay, but from the tax rates, and that doesn't include local taxes, right? That's just the government from the UK. I mean, aren't there local city taxes also that come out of your income outside of that 20% of your £12,000 isn't also local?
Yeah, you've got council tax to pay.
So that's over and above.
Everybody has to pay, yes.
Right, it's over and above that 20% out of the 12,000. Yeah. So by the time you're finished paying tax, you're paying them to live.
Yes, pretty much, yeah.
You know, here, I mean, we have, you know, obviously, tax brackets too, but it's a little different. For example, Mostly from it's the lowest tax rate here is 10% of your income. There's 10% of your paycheck. And this is for federal tax. If the head of the household is making, $14,000 a year, 12% if you're making $14,000 to $53,700 a year. I'm going to check on this number here because that's
wow.
What's, let me check here. Let me go check and see how good I am. Hold on a second. Yeah, here we go. I got it. I'm not bad. I'm doing all right. Hey,
okay.
This is the Andy Demander show. So yeah, I was right. So it is 10%. Single, 0 to 10,000. Head of household, 0 to 14,000. If you're married or filing jointly, it's to 19,750. 10% of your income, right?
Yeah.
So you don't hit that 40%. Mark, you don't. I mean, 22% is 53,085. Yeah, Amanda, you should come over here. 53,085. it's much more attractive here. I mean, from what you're telling me, the highest tax bracket here is 37. So you can make $518,401, right? More than $500,000. And then you're paying 37%. From what you're telling me, you live in the UK. You're paying 40% if you make how much?
50,000.
That's unbelievable to me. That's absolutely ludicrous. That's craziness. I don't know how you get by. I don't know.
I used to look at these like CEOs who would drive around, like the CEO of a company I used to work for, this educational company, and he would drive into work with his Jag. And I'm thinking, you've got a whacking great big percentage on your pay. How on earth are you managing to live so attractively? You know, it blew me away. It really blew me away.
Unreal.
Yeah.
Anyway, yes, moving right along. A lot more news to talk about today. What's going on? For example, we're going to bring Donald Trump back into the news on this show again. Don't you miss having Trump being so active in our show and pre-election and during the campaigns and all that? We had so much fun. Oh, they're the good old days of the Andy Demander show. No, it's always a fun time here. And of course, when Trump was the news and made himself the news, we kind of joined the party and had a lot of fun with it in a different way than most commentators and news programs do, because this is, after all, the Andy and Amanda show. And also, Cornell Butler, a lot of you who've been listening to the show, he's our show coordinator and has joined us numerous times, of course, and we've changed our time frame around on the show to make it more convenient for live this audience in the UK and surrounding areas. So, for example, right now it's about 8:24 in the evening. In the UK, it's 3:24 isn't it 8:24? Hey, you know what else is kind of cool? We're in the same day.
I know, right? Because usually we're like a day apart.
Our old show is like 1 or 2 in the morning there, and you are way into the future. Show actually traveled into the future.
That's incredible, right? We've nailed time travel. That's epic.
We've nailed it. Only on the Andy and Amanda show, but with this time frame, and Cornell being the busy guy that he is, sometimes he joins us at this new time structure. But I just want to mention his name because he's the guy behind the scenes who kind
of course,
does a lot of our social media, pushes the show along, orchestrates some guests who then go to Amanda, who then get invited on the show. You're lucky, to get invited on the show. I'm telling you something, it'd be, like our last guest was just on Monday, was Dolores Jordan, Michael Jordan's sister, who was fabulous. She was wonderful on the program.
What a woman.
Yeah, wasn't she great? Really inspiring.
I adore her.
Inspirational. She was wonderful and hopeful. Hopefully she'll be joining us again to talk about her various business ventures as well. And she's going to come back on. We've had Mark Lester on the show from Oliver. He's going to be joining us again later this month, I'm pretty sure. And a lot of other guests. So it's been great, and my point here being that a lot of this is orchestrated by Cornell Butler, whose name needs to be promoted as neon on this show. So I just want to say that he's behind the scenes and pushes this thing along. So
he is.
But getting back to where we're going before the news is that Donald Trump is once again going to be on the forefront of our news here in this country, only because the criminal probe now heads to a grand jury in Georgia this week. And let's talk about the facts of what is driving that. The Fulton County District Attorney is seeking subpoenas for witnesses and documents in the investigation surrounding Trump's calling the DA and Attorney General in Georgia, and asking him to find some votes. 11,000, what was it, 180, as I recall. Let's see, what was that about? Let me see if I can bring everybody's memory back here to this phone call.
So all I want to do is this. I just want to find 11,780 votes, which is one more than we have. The people of the country are angry, and there's nothing wrong with saying that, that you've recalculated.
Yeah, a lot of us didn't know that Trump was playing with helium at the time. But anyway.
You can still tell it's Trump, though, even on helium.
I tried. I did my best. Even on helium. Yeah, it's still Trump. But this whole matter is all about whether Donald Trump didn't. You heard the phone call. I mean, that was, we're having some fun with it, but that was the call. Whether he committed election fraud. And a major focus is on the infamous call with the Georgia Secretary of State. I think I said it was the Attorney General. I was wrong. I'm sorry. I kept confused here, my old age. But it was the Secretary of State. The DA is actually investigating whether there's something wrong with saying you've recalculated. Go ahead and recalculate the votes. What? Basically find me 11,000 whatever it is votes. Particularly if it's part of a criminal election plot, the investigation looks at potential state crimes, which include the most straightforward soliciting election fraud, soliciting this guy, telling him to find votes and saying, hey, if you don't, this could be very bad for you. Threat. Also potentially making false statements or conspiracy, racketeering, violating the oath of office and involvement in these violence or threats related to an election administration. The DA, we have what the DA had to say regarding this. Let's take a listen to that and where they're going and what they have. Here's the Georgia DA.
So all I want to do is this. I just want to find 11,000.
Yes, he's not only calling, but he's also the district attorney of Georgia.
No. Wow. That's impressive.
No, I'm kidding. I couldn't resist. I couldn't resist. No, here's Fran Willis, the here's again the Georgia DA.
So all I want to do is this.
Welcome to the Eddie Mander Show. This is the Georgia DA, Fran Willis, looking into the Trump fraud.
You look at facts to see, did they really have intent, like asking for a specific number and then going back to investigate and understand that number is just one more than the number that is needed. It lets you know that someone had a clear mind, they understood what they were doing, and so when you're pursuing the investigation, facts like that may not seem so important become very important.
And his phone call, it's all right there on tape. And I don't mean to repeat something we all got so fatigued from during the last 4 years, one Trump story, one corruption story after another. But the fact that this is in the middle of, Biden just was in office a month ago. Trump just, gave this ridiculous speech filled with lies, again, how the election was stolen at the conservative convention in Orlando this last weekend. It's important. It's important. We usually, in this country anyway, we don't usually end presidential elections having an inauguration of a new president within 2 months of having the DA actively looking at whether or not to indict the former president, because they were caught on tape blatantly trying to overturn the election and steal it, at least in the state of Georgia.
Yeah.
And, wholly apart from, let us not forget, lest we never forget what happened on January 6th. And I say this all to remind our listeners and our people, whether you're hearing this show live or on podcast, that this is not normal. This is not okay. It's not okay. And regardless of whether or not the legal standard is ultimately met, which is a process that we don't and can't prejudge, we don't know, we're not soothsayers, but do you think that, you know, in a wider context, you know, Trumpism and the insurrection play any role in this, or should they? You know, is that you know, part of this? Mm. You know, I'm kind of thinking that the last 4 years has really deepened our threshold for what is and what isn't possible in the news cycle from this former disgusting, corrupt, ridiculous, crazy man who's held our, who somehow mesmerized the minds of millions of people in the United States. I think we've become a little anesthetized, for lack of a better word, to how much news can be surrounding one particular figure. But again, it seems unlikely that the DA is going to think about the this in isolation. You know, they're probably going to put this whole thing together and look at the larger systemic issue, which is, you know, which this is only a part of that. It's only,
you know, dare I say this, Andy, and I'm probably going to be abused for saying this.
I love when you're abused. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Like,
no, go ahead.
Excuse me. Thank you, Andy. I love you too. when I heard that clip the other day, you played Trump, that speech he gave, that recent one, and the crowd went crazy. Yeah, I had chills because I had a flashback of listening to Hitler give a speech, and the crowd's going crazy, and I was just like, just in that moment, that flash of it just hit me like a ton of bricks. And I hate to make that comparison, and there's people out there probably just thinking, Amanda, shut up, you don't know what you're talking about, how dare you compare him to Hitler. I'm not trying to, I'm just expressing that in that moment, hearing that clip, and then just, it took me straight back to the one with Hitler, and I had chills.
I am right with you. I'm right with you on that. And I feel like you, I guess we're on the same page here, because I feel like you do and did, in that I almost feel inhibited to compare Trump to Hitler, because, you know, Hitler marched 11 million people into gas chambers and put people and made people dig graves and then execute them in the big graves that they dug and raped and mutilated millions of people under his command and his watch. And can you compare Donald Trump? So when we, I think, Amanda, you know, tell me if I'm wrong here, but when we, and I know I'm not wrong here, when we make those comparisons to Donald Trump, we're not comparing the atrocities created by Hitler. We're creating the mechanism, the psychological mechanism of how he came into power in the 30s. And there's a direct correlation. There is and not just Hitler, but other dictators and rulers and horrific rulers and terrorist people and rulers in the past, in the history of the world. It's
the same psychological.
And I think it wasn't too many shows ago where we talked about the correlation between that psychological process and attaching that to you know, the cult leaders such as Jim Jones, you know, Waco, Texas, other cults where parents and friends, you know, try to find their loved ones and they find they join this cult and they figure out how, and many have given up all their money, like donating millions, $250 million right now that Trump's, you know, has in his war camp fund, that he's, people are giving him money. That people have given their entire life savings to cult leaders and swear by, and these, some of these cult leaders have abused women, have orgy, have gotten many women pregnant, and we ask, what is it? How did you fall for that? And I could say, how does somebody in the real world, bird's eye view, look at Donald Trump and say that his behavior has been and is okay, and swear by this guy? And yell, Trump, we love you. Trump, 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 you know? Yeah. The idea here is that in this, you know, grand jury probe is that these are potential criminal charges related to trying to prevent the certification of at least the election in Georgia. You know, eliminate Georgia's votes. Fine, go ahead and look at them again and find me some votes. But they're part of this broader campaign. This is you know, an alleged campaign to disrupt the election counts in numerous states, not just Georgia, and then finally culminating in the disruption of the certification of the Electoral College, as we all know, entirely on January 6th. So is it going to be I think it is. It's going to be very hard to divorce this particular instance from the broader context of the entire, you know, Trump lie of the disruption of the election, of the trying to disrupt Congress from that certification. You know, everybody knows that Donald Trump and he's clearly asking for election fraud. And you know, they during the trial, the impeachment trial by the Senate, he was impeached by Congress. So just the trial, the Republicans made light of this, saying, "Look, you know, when you say, hey, you know, go try to find, you know, a couple more runs here. Go try to, you know, it's a figure of speech. It was a context. It wasn't Trump wasn't asking to go sifting through the tallied votes and turn them over. He was just saying, hey, go casual conversation." But everybody knows that Trump was clearly asking for election fraud here. I mean, that's why he was saying, "Find me these votes because my people are mad. They're mad. They're mad as hell. They're not going to take it anymore. They're mad for me."
Yeah.
But what do you say to the legal defense that is tough in talking about the middle of the contested outcome of the campaign? His argument that they don't actually go start moving ballots around. He didn't say those words. Hey, go change some ballots. Because he didn't say that, he's innocent on that phone call. Because he didn't actually say those words, he's innocent. But what about this defense? I mean, I think we're going to see a number of defenses that we saw in the impeachment trial. Again, remember, he was impeached. You know, you can't Congress impeaches. The Senate, you know, decides whether he's guilty or not. But, you know, he was impeached twice, the only president in U.S. history that was. But that impeachment trial being recycled here, is that what's going to happen in Georgia? The idea that when the former president spoke, he was not being literal. It was just sort of tough talk, like that locker room talk when he said women just let him grab their pussy. You remember that talk? Remember that? That's not language you hear from me. Believe me, that was Donald Trump. I had to repeat it. You won't hear any talk like that in any. Well, first of all, I didn't go to too many locker rooms because I was very modest in gym and didn't like to get undressed in some sort. Anyway,
no.
You won't hear any kind of that talk from this kid. But anyway, that was tough. But that was all like locker room talk that he was doing, like the last locker room talk conversation that they tried to talk us into. But he didn't actually mean for anyone to steal anything. That's what they're saying. It may also be the case that, you know, they're going to have to show that the state will, you know, have to some kind of prove that the president, in order to meet the charges, they actually knew what he was doing was fraudulent.
Yes.
And he continued to do this willfully, knowing that it was fraudulent and with the knowledge that it was illegal to do what he was doing. And that's a pretty high standard to meet, I think. I'm not an attorney. I don't know about these things. I'm simply commenting on what the news is. We don't make the news here. We don't report the news here. We comment on what is the news, you know. But again, I think that's a pretty high standard to meet. So again, there are likely be a lot of defenses that go to that question. You know, again, this is not the full intent when he made that statement. It was a tough – you know, the intent was to overturn and try to somehow say that Georgia, in fact, went for Donald Trump and the electoral votes were supposed to go to Donald Trump in Georgia and they didn't. It was stolen. So that's going to be a big deal. That's going to be a big deal. You know.
And I'm sure in his mind he had all the right intentions. You know, it's just when you're trying to support a guy who appears like he doesn't really care about anything but himself, that's hard to get your head around and take to, especially from an outside of the US. I mean, I can't imagine what it's like to be caught up in that kind of politics, because I've noticed in the US, politics is a very grand thing. It's almost a huge celebrity status compared to the kind of politics that goes on here. We kind of play it down a little, whereas the US is very much patriotic and, you know, really believe in themselves and the government. And that's not to say that people here in the UK don't do the same with our government. It's just that it's downplayed a little more here. And so being an outsider from this environment, viewing Donald Trump in his prime, doing what he's been doing, it's a very shocking and entertaining experience, to say the least.
I can only imagine. I can only imagine. Do you know, Amanda, what if I wanted to go out and prevent being infected from coronavirus, what would I what would I do?
Well, nowadays
only
you
go out,
get a vaccine, right? But
aside from the vaccine, I want to go out in society, and I want to go to the food store, and I don't want to get infected. What would I do to prevent me from getting infected? What would I do?
Well, first of all, if you were trying to be sensible, because this sounds like a harsh judgment now, but if you were trying to be sensible, one, you would keep your social distancing. You would try to be safe and keep your distance. Two, you would wear a mask to prevent your spreading the virus. However, you've got to rely on everybody else wearing a mask in order to not receive the virus.
Exactly. Exactly. Of course, social distancing, yes, but wearing a mask. We all know that if you wear the right mask, obviously, that you won't, you'll be safe. And you keep your distance, but you're not going to inhale any of those spike protein droplets that are exhaled from other people who may be infected. And if you are, if you are infected, you will not infect others if you do this properly. So, and we've seen the coronavirus numbers drop dramatically, and we'll go over those numbers later, dramatically. You know, I don't think that the vaccine has had enough impact to make a big dent so far in this, but people, you know, state mandates, we have a national policy in place, and there has been a change since Biden took office in his first, you know, over 30 days in office. There's been a change, and I think there just has been, and I think people are being more careful, people are being better, they're wearing the masks. Now, Governor Greg Abbott, he's the governor of the state of Texas here. I don't think he's going to be the governor of Texas too long. As a matter of fact, I think he was auditioning to call the bus departures at the local Trailways bus depot there in Dallas for his next job.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And he's also – he said that he would like to perhaps take a shot at being the loudspeaker announcer at the Texas Rangers baseball games. So he used that – to announce his new mask policy for the state of Texas. We went to the Texas Stadium and were able to catch his audition.
Wonderful.
Let me play it for you. It's cool. You know, we had one of our field reporters go on there and record it. Pretty cool. But I think he did a pretty good job.
Yeah.
Let's take a listen. Let's take a listen.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
Effective next Wednesday, all businesses of any type are allowed to open 100%. That includes any type of entity in Texas. Also, I am ending the statewide mask mandate.
Huh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I need you to put, so there was Governor Greg Abbott announcing to the crowd that. Oh my God. Go ahead. All right. That was my reaction. The baseball stadium announcements, I thought he did an okay job. But what he had to say? Yes, effective Wednesday, let's be clear, nobody in the state of Texas will be required to wear a mask to go anywhere. Any business entity, I don't care what it is, cannot prohibit anybody from entering the store without if they don't wear a mask, and any employee will not have to wear a mask.
I think
in
that's
the state
one
of
the worst things I've heard in a little while. Oh, Andy.
Yeah.
Just as we're on the mend and making some progress to announce something like that. I mean, once one state does it, another state's going to be like, sure, let's follow suit, whether it's guided or not. You know? I don't know what to say. I really don't know what to say. And if I do, it's not good.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not good. It's not good.
I just hope people still have that sense of, well, you know, just because somebody said this doesn't mean that I should do this. I hope and I pray for these people that nobody ends up in a serious situation from that, because I'm shocked. I'm really shocked. We're just making progress.
And here's something interesting. You know, when if you look back to January 10th, the CDC notified the Texas Department of State Health Services of a SARS-CoV-2 B.1.1.7 variant case, Corpus Christi, Texas. A staff member conducted a case investigation on January 10th and 11th of a patient that was 61 years old, had visited family in United Kingdom during November 13th to December 30th of 2020, and reported having been exposed to a relative experiencing COVID-19 compatible symptoms, which were like cough, runny nose, headache, that kind of thing. Another relative at the same gathering received a positive COVID-19 test that resulted in the United Kingdom on January 10th, in your backyard there, because remember what they called the UK variant. Remember that? We talked about that at the time. So this is in Texas. So the variant is live and well in Texas.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it's – like you said, you know, we're trying to fix this thing. We're trying to you know, how many people who are living right now as we broadcast this show live, how many people are going to be dead within 6 to 8 weeks because of what Greg Abbott just said?
Yeah.
10 weeks. You know, whatever. You know my point. Soon.
Yeah. I just think that's so irresponsible. Sorry, sweetheart. Mm-hmm. Please continue.
No, I mean, Trump, I firmly believe, is responsible for you know, hundreds of thousands of deaths in the United States because his lack of a national mandate, of a national policy at the onset of this thing, for not being honest with the United States February 8th when he's talking to Bob Woodward saying this is such a bad one. Maybe we'll play that tape again sometime, but soon. But yeah. You know, I hate to, you know, as I said earlier, to fatigue our listeners of the same things we go round and round. But we're talking well over 500,000 people who, you know, a year ago were living and their lives have ended because of COVID. Not the underlying conditions or their age, not to say that some of them would have died of natural causes regardless of whatever, like anybody, you get hit by the truck the next day, you don't know, or unfortunately you have to be stricken with a sudden stroke or heart attack or cancer or whatever it might be. We know that, you know, you live and you die in this world, we know that. But putting that aside, over 500,000 people died because of COVID. It is not a hoax. People are believing it's a hoax. It's a lie, just like the election was stolen, a lie. And how people, as we talked about earlier in the show, how do you believe these lies? You know, where does that come from? You know, not believing science, not believing experts, not believing on the real world and what is, but believing in conjured up baseless lies, these fictitious stories that come of nowhere with no facts, no scientific evidence, nothing to support them. Because people spewed them and other people believed it. And then they created agreement because you get enough people creating agreement, that becomes their truth, their real world, when it is not the real world.
Beliefs are a very, very powerful thing in every way. And, you know, something I've learned over the past 10 years, Andy, when I've been through a lot of things, as you know. And,
I do.
You know, under a lot of self-examination, I put myself under the microscope because I wanted to know what was going on in me, why I was thinking the way I was, why I was turning to the things that I was. And I wanted to have a better quality of life. And so from doing that, you know, I got to the point where I was judging myself on such a level to understand where my beliefs were coming from, what triggered those beliefs, what fed those beliefs. And I still have beliefs now that I battle with, that I'm trying to strip back so that I can get to a place where I'm viewing everything from a more open-minded space to allow myself the ability to assess things on a deeper level and see where is the truth in these things. There are so many beliefs in this world that get people caught in a trap. Please, Andy, don't play that song.
You read my mind. You read my mind.
But they are, you know, it can be a very dangerous thing. And police are a wonderful thing to have. They are. They're precious. You know, if they're fed in the right way, they're not causing any damage or harm to anybody else. And they're feeding you in a way that nurtures you in the best way possible. But when they become damaging and then they get spread around and thrown onto other people, and you're then told you need to believe this and you need to do it this way. And it's like, well, how powerful is that belief of yours, and how true is it for you to be enforcing it on me in such a way? Allow me to experience that belief for myself and assess for myself whether that belief is worthy of, you know, my energy, my power that I'm going to give it and feed it and take into my life and transform my life with that.
Yeah.
I just think we all should be very careful with the type of things we believe. And I've had this discussion with my partner, and, you know, we've gone deep into it, and it's been awesome to open up that can of worms to see, okay, what are my beliefs, and are they good? Are they healthy? Are they valuable? Where are they coming from? You know, and then that expands to the world beliefs and so on and so on. I just think it's something people should be aware of for sure.
I wholeheartedly agree with you. I just, like, you know, I'm with everything you're saying. I think, you know, it's just, you know, we all have, you know, as you know, I'm, you know, physiology and science and biology is and evolution is why we are here. We all have human brains, and all those human brains, which are organs in our body. Our bodies are nothing. Right now our brain, my brain, the little one I have, is communicating. is communicating to you, you know, through, and you know, nerves and synapses and things that are happening between the thoughts that go to our vocal cords that express, that we exhale air, and words come out in dogs, they bark, in chimpanzees, how's it going? Like this. Very good. Now, anyway, don't quit your day job. No, I'm saying, anyway. What is it? You know, and I'm no rocket scientist. I'm Joe Schmo on the street. I mean, heck, you know, I've done things in my career, and currently I'm doing this radio show and playing the guitar, and that's what I do. But there is no question that you and I, you know, thinking alike in many respects, are 100% correct when we can make statements about where the SARS virus, you know, how it affects us, what do we do to stop it? The election wasn't stolen. There's no supporting documents. There's, you know, we talk about the problems of the world. We talk about, you know, various political ideologies, and we've discussed so many things on the show in the past almost year. And I think, you know, and what we've done, you know, diving into the sources, you know, let's just take the election wasn't stolen. It's a fact it wasn't stolen. I'm just going to use that just because it's been out there for so much and talked about. But we have the same, you know, our brains, although our backgrounds are different. You know, many people's backgrounds are different. No two human beings are identical. Would one's brain lead them to believe what Donald Trump says, and another person's brain would say no? Is it that one person just wants or has a desire or needs to have something fulfilled within their own psyche, and that fills that plug, that emptiness, whatever it might be, and therefore, and then they feel like they belong to something very powerful, because now they belong to a whole group of people, a whole army of people. Obviously, a whole army of people invaded our Capitol on January 6th. And they belong. I'm not saying everybody obviously invaded the Capitol. They didn't, for sure, but they belong to that group, and now they feel stronger. They can pound their chest. They believe, you know, damn it, you know, I'm not gonna let the authorities, I'm not gonna let the government, I'm not gonna let them tell me what's right. I'm not gonna let them dictate to me what my freedoms are. God damn it, you know, I live in this country. My freedoms are my freedoms, and you can't make me wear a mask. God damn it. But what if the reason why we say that you should wear a mask is not anything to do with your rights or your freedoms, but to protect your life and the life of your loved ones, the life of your mother, your grandmother, your friends, your sisters, your brothers, and maybe, you know, you're infected, and for you to protect those people, it has nothing to do with your rights or your freedoms. But yet they feel this, God damn it, you know, the election was stolen. Trump said it was. Of course, Trump said it was going to be stolen months before the election ever happened, before there's ever any evidence of anything, before the first vote was cast. The election is going to be stolen. They're going to win because they're going to steal it. That's the only way they can win. And I'm running against the weakest candidate that's ever run in this country. And as a matter of fact, if he wins, I may have to leave the country. Well, we know why he may have to leave the country. It ain't nothing to do with who he's running against. Anyway, but what is it? What you know, going back to the human experience, the human career.
Yeah.
You know, we could dive into that, and we have. And what are people? You know, if I say, well, I'm not. I think the election was stolen. There's no evidence. There's no proof. There's no anything. There's conjured up conspiracy theories. There's baseless lies.
Yeah.
And fictitious stories that have come out of the woodwork. There's ridiculous stories. You know, the trash trucks pulled up in the middle of the night with suitcases full of ballots. And that's why Biden got more votes than Trump. You believe that?
Yeah.
And yet Republican poll watchers, Trump supporters were there and said, no trucks pulled up. Never happened.
Yeah.
These are Trump supporters that said that. Oh, no, they did. I read. Somebody said. What?
Yeah.
Why do you believe it?
I think there's so many things that contribute to believing in a conspiracy. So many different mindsets and situations and experiences that led people to that place. I mean, going back, I can only go on personal experience, obviously, and I think that's all anybody can really go on. To speak for somebody else is quite arrogant and ignorant, and that's how I see things. So in terms of my journey and what I've experienced, I got to a place where many, many years ago, I suffered with a deep depression. And so I wanted to come through that depression because I wanted life to be normal again. I wanted to feel normal again. Didn't understand what was happening to me, you know. Life was literally wearing me down. So I got to a place where I got angry at the world, angry at everything that was going on. I started looking into conspiracy theories, you know, trying to understand why the world seemed so tragic and powerful and negative, and why humanity was turning on itself. So I went really deep with it, and I got to a place where I just couldn't take it anymore because it was so negative, and it was changing the way I saw things and behavior, and you know, I didn't like it. So I then started to make that shift into a more lighter, positive space, and from there everything progressed to get better for myself. So from my perspective, I was trying to find answers to everything I was witnessing around me, that anger, why things felt like there's no justice for things I was passionate about. And these things start to build and build. And when you're in that darkened space and things start to affect you more because you're in that darkened space, you take on a whole mindset of everything is negative. Everything needs to change. It's everybody's problem but yours. You're not putting yourself under the microscope and saying, okay, what is it about me that can change, that will then change the perspective of how I view life, and then possibly that will help change things in my surroundings. And I've got to admit, from those changes I made, everything around me started to change. And look at me now. I'm here with you, Andy, and we're talking about these things, and I've got a whole new perspective on life. I'm supportive of government. I'm supportive of a lot of these great changes that are going on in the world. Yes, I see the injustices still, because they are always going to exist, no matter what. But I have a healthier view of things because I took myself out of that blame everybody else place, that it was everybody else's fault. And I think, you know, when you've got that kind of mindset and those situations, we need to take a step back and say, okay, how is this affecting me? Why is it affecting me? Why am I responding this way? And maybe then we can see that the conspiracy in itself is not necessarily true, that you don't actually need that conspiracy to feel that importance in life, to feel that, you know, you're part of something bigger, that you have value. Because at the end of the day, that's what it was providing for me. It was trying to feed something in me that that place I was in at that time. So I think it's important for people to, you know, look at
but
that.
But when you look into kids, what you're saying is, and you find as conspiracies, whatever they may have been at the time.
Yeah.
You, and if it was baseless, I mean, did you look into something that had no no basis for being true and say, is that true? Or, I mean, you didn't follow that. Am I wrong? You didn't dive into that and live there, right? Or did you?
No, well, basically, I was doing a lot of soul searching, as they call it, and I was jumping from one conspiracy to the other, everything from government to, you know, all the weird mysteries of life. And so, you know, it took me to that place of just trying to find that something deeper to explain and give me a sense of purpose as to all the things that were going on in the world, like the corruption and control and people thinking that, you know, government want to create this society. You know, I won't go there because it gets very deep and, you know, it can cause a lot of problems. And people are aware of these conspiracies. They know they go on. So, you know, I delved in really deep with a lot of it, and I tried to find facts, and you go onto YouTube and you find all these videos to support those conspiracies, and you start to build up this truth in your mind that this is what is happening. But once you come away from all of that and you start viewing life from a different perspective, you then start seeing that balance again, and then you question, is it really true? And then you don't feel the same. You just don't feel the same about it. And
you know, there's something very empowering about what you just said. There's very, very enlightening and also very, very well thought out and very empowering to others, I think, about what you're talking about right now. Yeah, it really is. It really is.
It just,
and what you're really talking about, you know, what you're really saying is the ability to just let it go. Let it go.
Yeah.
Not easy to do, is it? Not easy to do.
No, it really isn't. I mean, it does take that conscious effort on your behalf. But for like any situation, Andy, sometimes you have to push yourself to the extreme before you make any kind of big change that's going to impact on you in such a positive way. And, you know, I've had many of those in my life, and I'm very grateful for them. I see them as a blessing. But, you know, at the time you think, what the fuck is this? You know, why am I going through this? You know, why me? You know, what you got against me, God? You know, why did government screw me over? Why is the world like this? You know, you fall into that trap so easily.
Yeah,
and you've got to, you know. I'm not telling people, you know, this is what you should do, but I'm saying that it's a wise idea to try and pull yourself back from that place to try and see it from a different perspective and understand what's happening to you, because you're worth it.
You're worth it.
And so are those around you. And,
but why, you know, it's interesting how we get there. And
maybe
I think,
that's a question you should ask China.
Yeah,
maybe
China has so good of answers.
They might have the answers. They just might. Thank you, Donald, for that. I love Donald's comments and him being
thank
part
you,
of the
Donald,
show.
Thank you, China.
What would you do without him? Yes, thank you.
I know.
But, what you said earlier, you know, a minute or two ago, about how you're happier, brighter, you kind of go on the other side of all this, and you did let go of your thoughts, of your perceptions, of wondering, you know, you're blaming everybody else. And once you got out of that, you found yourself being happier, being more enlightened, being more effective.
Yes.
And we can make the same assumptions of, you know, I mean, in life in general, you know, you start, you're born, and you, as you gain age and experience, it's actually experience, forget the age, it's experience.
Yeah.
Things begin to manifest themselves in your mind, and that becomes part of how you make assumptions and assertions as you begin to develop and grow and experience. And I don't mean grow up in terms of age, and I'm just talking about the experience that your mind, getting back to what we were saying earlier, your brain encounters as you experience and take in more, and all these things affect you. You know, I keep going back to this. I was a pilot, and having been in aviation for, you know, a good part of my life, I kind of had a philosophical overview of life, and always compared the human career to an airplane from takeoff to a safe landing. And all the variables, the turbulence, the weather, the clouds, the things that occur, the change in altitude because of the rough ride, or the change in routing, or maybe you lost an engine, something happens, an instrument went, passengers never knew about it, but something went, we fixed it, and landed safely.
Yeah.
How is life any different than that? you take off, and hopefully you get, hopefully you take off of the runway, because again, the wing has to, the airfoil has to overcome a lot of variables. The weight has to be just right, the weight and balance of the aircraft, the temperature, the runway length, all these things, the airflow over the wing, the flap settings, all these things have to be perfect for that machine to become airborne. And look at the human career as we advance from birth and what we have to do to take off and become effective. Not, I'm not saying successful. I'm saying effective as a human being, and you can't measure success by what, how much money one makes. That's not a definition of success. It's not a, a definition of being an effective human being, in my opinion. It's great. I'm glad you, you know, if somebody makes a lot of money, they can enjoy the fruits of that, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they've been successful. I mean, a lot of people have made a lot of money in mischievous ways, right? And those, a lot of those people are sitting behind bars right now. But anyway,
So, and not the, the type of bar that serves cocktails either.
Exactly. But and again, you know, and we know people who know all about that.
Don't ask me. Ask China that question.
Again, thank you, Donald. Yes.
he's always passing the buck, I've noticed.
But and there are people who who've been, you know, waiting for us.
I have been expecting you.
Yes. You know, for to, for something to happen, to make something go, and it, and it's, you know, and for that agreement to happen. But ultimately, it comes down to where we go, how we evolve, what our experience is, and what happens is that experience, the results that we get out of those experiences, can be effective, affect us negatively and have an impact on how we perceive the world going ahead. And it's very difficult to let our past, to let those occurrences mean nothing as we move ahead. But when you lack, when you look at the actual human experience, the fact that we cannot rewrite history, and man, I wish we could in many ways. You know, we cannot rewrite history. We cannot change what happened or occurred to us in the past, or what we perceive to have occurred to us in the past, whether it really did or really didn't, you know, but the perception of what happened to us. Or the perception of me saying and moving forward in life and saying I can't do something as a result of somebody saying to me, or an attitude or a prejudgment that occurred in my life in the past that, that gave me the assertion that I can't do this because of that. And letting go of that, because whether it happened or not in reality, in the real world, has no bearing on the page that has not yet been written yet in the next 5 minutes, the next 5 days, the next 5 years, next 50 years. And to let go of these things is, it's not just simple as letting go of the chain. Like we could just drop a chain and not have that chain become longer and thicker and heavier as our life progresses. And that's what happens in the human career. You know, that's what happens. And what and how this all correlates to our conversation is we're talking about, you know, those that believe in made up lies, the conspiracy theories, and their life experience, and their, is it their education? Is it their bringing up in their homes? Is it their where they live in geography in the United States? Is it the temperature outside? I don't know. But I just I just wonder, because and again, you, you and I are, you like to think we're incredibly bright, but we're, you know, we're, you know, we do what we do. We're, you know, I think you happen to be of superior intelligence to me. But aside from that, you know, the Andy Mandovich show, one of us is very bright. The other, anyway.
Excuse me. It doesn't work for one and not the other, okay? I'm just laying that down.
But we've you know we're like-minded. We view the world and people very in very similar ways. We come to from very different backgrounds in many ways, but we are, you know, we see the world on the same page. And I've got, you know, very dear friends who I've known for decades, who I see posting on Facebook in different places and reposting these incredible, disgusting images and lies and promoting Donald Trump and saying that, that Biden's going to be tried for treason and never be their president, and things about Trump which are lies, and these people who I've known and been dear friends and partied and raised our kids together and blah, 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 and they're putting these things out to the point where I can't have a relationship with these people anymore. You know, it becomes anti-American. It becomes disgusting, truly.
I think that's happened to so many people, Andy, to be fair. I think you start living your truth, and it's hard to bear then when somebody else's is conflicting so strongly with yours that you feel so passionate about, you know, everything in you is saying, no, I can't be around this. I feel for you being in that situation. I've had a lot of friends fall out over this whole situation with Trump and Biden. And I was shocked. I was genuinely shocked to see that thrift, that thing that separated them just for a political belief. And that's not to attack you in the way that you feel, Andy. I totally understand and respect your situation. Can I ask you, Andy, how deeply has it affected you?
It hasn't at all.
It hasn't?
Mm-mm. It just, okay. You know, again, you move on. In other words, I've never promoted anybody denying what happens in their life psychologically or emotionally. You know, every psychologist, counselor, psychiatrist think I'm, you don't hide and deny how you emotionally feel. I mean, you face it. But but then again, you do move on in life and you put it in a corner where it lives and you move on. You deal with it and you move on. And and I guess that's how I am, you know, you move on. And you move on. And you know, I look at the past with very fond, incredibly humorous, great memories. And it's not that this person, mine, or a couple of people who I know, and actually not just this person, we will communicate again. And sometimes I'm like, you know what? They can also call me. You know, why is it always up to me to make the call and say, hey, what's happening? Because I used to call and chat all the time, even from here in California.
Yeah.
But they can also call me, you know.
Yeah.
They don't call me, you know. They could. You know, but because you know, quite often, because we knew we were not politically aligned from years, even though the person was a very liberal Democrat way back when. And and through relationships and marriage and other things and family, I think they went back to being, and I'm in many ways more Republican than many Republicans I know. And we've talked about, you know, financial, you know, owning a business and being an entrepreneur and taxes, you know, we've talked about that. And in that regard, I'm probably libertarian, if anything, you know, I'm beyond being conservative in any respect. But at the same time, I have incredible appreciation for independent, for social justice, for the human experience. And I'm, you know, I'm probably liberal-minded libertarian, but that being said, I move on. It hasn't affected me at all. I feel, here's how it affected me. If I had to dive in and dive into the little brain of Andy here. Would be how in the world.
It made
world?
Him silent.
What the hell?
So that's how it affected you. Okay. I appreciate that.
Fuck that shit. God damn it. Jesus. God damn it. Fucking shit. What the hell?
Have I just stepped into a time warp? Is everything okay?
You know, anyway, as I was saying that, you know, talking about, you know, friends that you've been life friends for a long time and they start posting things on social media that you were in total, you know, shock. But hey, you were back and,
Andy, the weirdest thing has happened, sweetheart.
You left.
The last thing I heard you say was, and this is how it affected me. And then it went dead silent. And I'm sat here thinking, am I the only one speaking on there now? And I was like, Andy, are you there? why did it affect you that bad? I was like, am I caught in a time warp? And then all of a sudden,
well, you know what? This is for sure.
Yeah.
This is not Kleinenberg.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm so sorry about that, sweetheart. I didn't mean to abandon you. The whole connection was cut. I was like, wow.
I must apologize for not being here to greet you personally.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Now
yes.
My revenge is complete.
See? That's what happens
when you aim it. I just love those clips, Andy. I love them.
Yeah. You know? Mm.
Yes.
But anyway, I forget what I was saying. You did so rudely interrupt us by leaving, but, you know.
Sorry,
we thought we thought you were getting to some other things.
Doggy
you know,
style, for sure.
You know,
oh.
But we
No. certainly wasn't going there, that's for sure.
Oh, good. Just making sure. You know, these great days are, tougher meeting. Yes, there you go. You know,
because of tax elimination, will put money into people's pockets.
You got to pick a pocket or two.
We're going to eliminate taxes in my administration.
Yes. That would be great.
We're going to. You know, I'm still. You know, we talked a month ago or so. Half kidding, but half maybe not, about me running for wizard.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
How
mm-hmm.
amazing! Did you find your yellow brick road, Andy?
I've been looking and looking and looking, I don't I don't know. I'm thinking.
You're a contemptible lowlife of talking this way about this country.
So after I heard that, I said maybe not.
Okay.
I figured, what are my chances? You know, you know.
Yeah. Oh, the wizard.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Oh,
and, I'll get you, my pretty, and your little dog too.
Oh gosh. Yeah.
Andy.
Mm-hmm. Sick, stupid, ridiculous, obnoxious, vulgar, disgusting, whatever the case may be.
So I'm actually going to have to listen to this show back now to listen to what you said when I vanished off the show.
Well, we just had, Dracula made his appearance and...
Oh, wow.
Tried to...
You mean I missed that?
He's been listening in, and he tried to welcome you and you weren't there.
Oh, man. It's happened again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'll have to apologize to him personally.
You'll have to. I'm going to hold you to it. But anyway, I almost forgot to mention this. I should have mentioned it at the beginning of the show. Olivia Basket, actress, model, was scheduled to be on our program today and visit with us and hang out with us and talk to us about her adventures in life and her films and so forth. And some of you might know Olivia, but she's been a lot of, I guess, three or four more substantive films, done some modeling work from the East Coast. It looks marvelous. Let me tell you, my darling, she looks marvelous. She's going to be on the show with us, and she rescheduled for Friday's program, which will be broadcast live at the same time as this show. So that's 8 p.m. in the U.K., noon here on the West Coast, 3 p.m. In New York or Eastern time. And she'll be joining us on Friday's show. We look forward to having Olivia back on. Also, next week we're going to finally hear from the Flying Fahans, my friend Joe Fahan and his wife Margaret, who are retired Delta pilots who spent the last 6 years of their career flying together as captain and first officer. I keep asking Joe who was the real captain, who was the real first officer.
Yeah.
But anyway. And he said, in the flight deck, I am. Okay, cool. All right. But, but Joe and Margaret are going to be joining us, and I might even have my friend Les Aubin, the author. And I'm going to be sending you his book, Paper Wings. And folks, you want a good reading, good, fun, exciting reading, good Amazon and download or buy the book Paper Wings by Les Odman if you like adventure, tied in with aviation, tied in with kidnapping and murder and plots and, you know, all sorts of fun stuff that you really kind of keeps you on the edge of your seat. Pick up Les Odman's book, former American Airlines 777 captain, CNN commentator on aviation matters, Les Odman, Paper Wings. Get it from Amazon. Amanda, I will be sending you a signed copy of Paper Wings. Well, I'm not telling you who it's signed by, but you know, I'm going out somewhere. I'll find somebody to sign it, and I'll send it to you. Maybe the postman.
Keep that surprise for me. Yeah.
I will. I'm going to have the postman sign it. I am. That's just going to sign your copy.
It's a signed copy. How can I argue, you know? Somebody's sentiment will be in it.
And it's funny because, you know, I'm playing shows, and I tell people, you know, if you want a signed CD, you know, because I sell product right off the stage, you know, in the days of when you carried product with you to do shows, those days are kind of gone. But anyway, you carry, a ton of CDs with you on your tours and your shows, and people would, you know, whatever it was, $15 for a CD, and people would buy them after your show, hopefully. And I used to tell people at the end, you know, look, I got, CDs here, and some can be signed by anybody who you wish, I'm sure. I'm sure you get somebody to sign it, but they are available here after the show, or you go up to the merch booth and buy a signed copy of my CD. And I would say, you know, things like signed by who, we don't know, you know. That'll be part of the thrill. It's like opening a fortune cookie to find out who signed the CD. Anyway,
yeah.
Paper Wings is a great book and a great read. And Amanda, I'll be sending you a copy along with a bag of sand if I can make it down to the beach in time.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, you got it, man. You got it. But folks, Amazon, Paper Wings, Les Aubin, do it to it. But getting back, we're going to have Margaret and Fagan and her husband, Captain Joe, on the line with us. Next week, I think next Wednesday.
Yes.
And that'll be a fun show, talking all about flying wide-body jets all over the world and reminiscing about some of our adventures, which maybe we shouldn't reminisce too much about.
I see. Oh, that's going to be so much fun to hear, though. I can only imagine the amount of stories and varied stories that they have, as well as you, Andy. I think it's so interesting. I find it fascinating.
Yeah, it is fascinating. It's fun. And, you know, as you know, and I've talked about it a lot of times, aviation is still very much part of my life. I'm not actively doing it right now, but I spent, it's been a great, it's great to be part of that community still to whatever extent I can be. It's wonderful. I was even thinking about going up to Van Nuys, a big, huge corporate airport just north of LA, putting myself out there to do on-demand part-time first officer work in a corporate jet just to stay active. You know, like if a co-pilot in a company jet calls in sick or something, needs somebody to call me, boom, I go fill in. You don't have to be type-rated in the jet to be to fly as first officer, in the right seat. You don't have to have a type rating in that airplane but you fulfill the duties as requested by the captain and, work the radios and help navigation and, systems and, put the flaps and gear down as they instruct you to and lift them up when they tell you to and I thought about doing that. What the hell? We'll see.
That's pretty cool, Andy. Pretty cool.
Wouldn't it be kind of cool? I mean, I do have like 6,000 some odd hours of flight time. I thought that would be something else that would kind of cool. It'd be cool. You know what would be really cool?
What's that?
You know how you have Wi-Fi available on a lot on passenger jets?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be cool to get Wi-Fi? Like on one of my travels, when COVID kind of eases down, I'm planning on doing some trips to the East Coast. Wouldn't it be cool to do this show over Wi-Fi from 38,000 feet in the air?
Oh my goodness! Yeah, that would be so cool. Definitely.
Maybe I can get we can interview some of the passengers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Hi, we have Jane Doe here from Kansas City. Jane, welcome to the Andy and Amanda program. Where are you headed to today? Folks, we're here on American Flight 393, and we're going to be talking to some of the folks on this flight. Why they're on this flight, we don't really know. They probably don't know either, but they've joined us here on the Andy and Amanda show. We're here at the flight level 390, otherwise known as 39,000 feet, on this beautiful 757 airplane, which is, I think, headed the wrong way. Let me go ask the pilot if he knows exactly where we're headed, because I really don't. Make sure I got on the right plane. You know what they say, time to spare, go by air. Thank you for flying with Captain Andy. Now.
Time to spare, go by air. I like that.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much, everyone. pleasure having you aboard with us today. We're not quite sure if you're on the right flight. We don't know if we're on the right flight. Yeah, you know, but thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
They love flying with me.
Yeah. And I ask them.
Why have you come here?
That's why I ask all my passengers.
Yeah, and then my co-pilot. In you after that question.
Thank you. My co-pilot goes over the PA. She yells,
"Catastrophe!"
Thank you for flying with Captain Andy. Yes, yes.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how horrific was your flight?
Well,
the secret is big deal. It takes 3 minutes, give him an orgasm, then go to sleep.
That was my favorite co-pilot. That was my favorite co-pilot I ever had. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Quite a relaxed player then, were you, Andy?
Can we talk? And the flight deck, you know, it was really bad. You had to serve these, you know, chili up there or something. And you're the other pilot, you know. And sometimes you forget to turn the PA mic on. You know, you're walking on, you have the PA mic on, you're up there going like this. There's a whole cabin, you got 397 passengers back there, you know.
Transport and somebody, because you're in a small confined space, and then somebody just lets rip. You don't know who it is, you just smell it, and everybody's looking around at each other like, where the hell did that come from?
It was embarrassing. One time actually happened. I was talking to air traffic control and I was having a casual conversation with a friend of mine, and I had the air traffic control, my microphone, talking to Miami Center. This is what the air traffic controller heard in Miami, working radar on my flight.
What is your porn fantasy, man?
Yeah, actually, unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah. Gosh, I just was given a red light saying 90 seconds left on this incredible show we've been having.
Wow. Yeah.
You can't wait to get rid of this.
Oh, that's been quite a serious show as well, hasn't it, up until this point?
you know why?
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs.
Everybody.
I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"